the Noon Report from Family Life, bringing a Christian worldview to what's happening in New York, Pennsylvania, across the country, and around the world. Weather with Kevin Williams, sports with Sunny Delfiette, plus special features and reports with the Family Life News team. Now, here's what's happening.
Debate night in Cleveland. Good afternoon. Welcome to the broadcast.
Let me tell you, it's going to be a get your popcorn ready kind of event.
With Election Day just 5 weeks from today, the first of three presidential debates happens tonight. 9 o'clock start time, and for 90 minutes, President Trump and Joe Biden will go head to head, toe to toe, eyeball to eyeball on the issues impacting this country. Correspondent Stephen Portnoy has a preview.
The two men will stand at podiums facing moderator Chris Wallace. There will be no opening or closing statements. There will be an audience. Everyone in the hall at Case Western Reserve University's Health Education Campus will receive a COVID test.
Canisius College political scientist Dr. Kevin Hardwick says the debate moderator, Chris Wallace, is one of the best.
He is the best in the business. He's an excellent interviewer. He holds people's feet to the fire. He will not let them dodge the question. He'll ask follow-up questions. And I think he'll hold both accountable.
Political pundit Ari Fleischer says the president has to play offense tonight and hit Biden where it hurts.
I would smoke him out also on a lot of these far-left issues. How far left are you going to take America? And we have to just see how strong he is just being on a stage at 9 o'clock at night till 10:30 at night.
Fleischer says Biden has to survive. Trump has to win tonight in Cleveland. Rich Lowry with the National Review.
Trump needs this debate more than Biden does. He has ground to make up, and he needs to shake up the trajectory of this race.
Trump and Biden will field questions on six topics ranging from the coronavirus, race relations, to the U.S. Supreme Court. Supreme Court nominee Amy Coney Barrett met today with a handful of GOP senators who will help decide her fate at what is expected to be a contentious Senate confirmation hearing next month. Six Democrats on the Judiciary Committee have already said they won't even sit down with the judge. Texas Republican Ted Cruz.
I fully expect the confirmation hearing to be a political circus, and I think we'll see a Cory Booker Spartacus moment. And we're already seeing them target Judge Barrett's young kids, which is really despicable.
Judge Barrett has seven children, including two that she adopted from Haiti. Senator Cruz is confident the judge will become a justice by the end of October. The worldwide death toll from COVID-19 has just topped the 1 million mark.
It's a mind-numbing figure.
Mind-numbing and agonizing, says UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres.
We must never lose sight of each and every individual life. They were fathers and mothers, wives and husbands, brothers and sisters.
More than one in five deaths worldwide is right here in the U.S. of A. President Trump says we will be dispersing soon 150 million new COVID test kits that show results within 15 minutes. America's largest school district welcomed back students today for the first time since the pandemic began back in mid-March. Scott Pringle reports from New York City.
There are social distancing markers all over the sidewalk, signs telling students where to enter and exit, and health checks. Cindy teaches at PS 48 and is very frustrated at the constant changes.
Parents need childcare. Parents need to have, you know, work. They need to know what's happening, and there's been no thought. The children have not been a factor at all in any of this.
On Thursday, middle and high school students will return. School start dates were pushed back following a teacher shortage and coronavirus-related safety concerns.
We don't have enough teachers. There'll be another change.
Oh, yeah. I don't think we're going to make it the whole week.
Scott Pringle, New York.
Kentucky Attorney General Daniel Cameron says grand jury testimony in the Breonna Taylor case will be made public after all, and that will happen tomorrow. Adriana Diaz reports from Louisville.
In a surprise development late Monday night, the Attorney General told CBS News that he would actually comply. He stated, "The grand jury is meant to be a secretive body. It's apparent that the public interest in this case isn't going to allow that to happen."
Breonna Taylor was shot eight times in a botched drug raid back in March. Not a single police officer connected to that shooting was charged in her death. Deadly wine country wildfires are ravaging Northern California. Three separate fires have merged into one, and that giant inferno is chasing thousands from their homes.
Warning, fire evacuation in progress.
Three deaths blamed on the blazes in Sonoma and Napa counties, home to some of the most prestigious wineries in the world. Herald, reporter Rachel Wolf.
Flames roared across the hills around St. Helena, forming fire tornadoes as neighbors rushed to get out before it was too late.
This whole hill was on fire.
Firefighters saved his home. Sean Marr wasn't so lucky.
The only thing standing is a tennis court.
The blaze has consumed nearly 40,000 acres and is 0% contained.
Waking up at 3 in the morning, it was just, you know, a big red ball of fire right next to us.
Correspondent Miguel Almaguer says these scenes of utter devastation are all too commonplace.
3 years ago, the Tubbs fire obliterated parts of Santa Rosa. Today, flames are threatening what's left of the same community.
Governor Gavin Newsom's declared a state of emergency in 3 Northern California counties. In Alberta, Canada, lightning has struck.
And the Tampa Bay Lightning have won the Stanley Cup!
Tampa Bay beat Dallas to win the COVID-abbreviated NHL championship in just 5 games last night in Edmonton. We'll have more on that in sports. Also ahead, eviction moratorium, election lawsuit, and church-state issues in Chemung County. First weather, here's Kevin.
Good afternoon. For a change, we've got some rain in the area and rain in the forecast. The details are coming up. We'll see you in 10 minutes.
All right, we do need the rain. Thank you, Kevin. Let's check the headlines next. News where you live. From New York and Pennsylvania, New York's COVID-19-caused job losses are among the worst in the country, and the recovery is one of the most sluggish in recorded history. New York is still more than a million jobs short of its pre-virus total 6 months into this pandemic. Only Hawaii has seen more anemic job growth. More in this report from Family Life's Jeremy Miller.
Social limitations and travel restrictions have decimated jobs in the hospitality, food, arts and entertainment, and retail industries. Experts say if the state follows through on its threat to cut aid to municipalities and school districts by 20% to offset its own budget shortfall, it would lead to a wave of public employee layoffs. The string of double-digit unemployment rates from April through August is the longest run of its kind since the state started tracking jobless claims back in 1976. Jeremy Miller, Family Life News.
Thank you, Jeremy. Pennsylvania Republican lawmakers have asked the U.S. Supreme Court to put on hold a recent ruling in that presidential battleground state. That ruling by the state Supreme Court extends the deadline to receive and count mail-in ballots. 2 million mail-in ballots have already been sent out in Pennsylvania. Pennsylvania Congressman Glenn Thompson is calling out Governor Wolf for faulting President Trump over his recent campaign rallies in the Commonwealth. Wolf calls them dangerous. The congressman says,
Tom Wolf's a hypocrite. Quite frankly, I don't see him saying anything about the violent riots that are occurring even within the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania at times. In fact, he has joined and been shown walking shoulder to shoulder with those individuals. You can't have it both ways.
Governor Wolf calls the president's political pep rallies a public health threat in the midst of this pandemic. The president has been to the Keystone State a half dozen times since the start of September. A church at the center of a COVID-19 outbreak in Horseheads, New York, is condemning a closure order from Chemung County.
What a better scapegoat than a small Baptist church.
Church attorney James Ostrowski says the First Amendment rights of the Lighthouse Baptist Church are being violated here.
The church has been unfairly accused of things. There's no evidence at all that anything improper was done.
County Executive Chris Moss says the church was not following COVID guidelines.
Only some of the folks were wearing facial coverings. We know there was no social distancing of 6 feet taking place. We also have information that a parishioner who was positive was allowed to attend church, not only attend church, but sing in the choir.
But the church attorney says New York has crossed a dangerous line here, a constitutional line, with its shutdown order.
Governor Cuomo does not have the legal right to be a dictator. The Constitution was enacted during a time when there were viruses all over the place. There's never any understanding that the Constitution was dependent on everybody being in good health. We know this whole thing has been politicized.
Ostrowski says there's no evidence that the shutdown orders have prevented the spread of COVID. 70 COVID cases are connected to this church, the Lighthouse Baptist Church in Horseheads, New York. Pennsylvania school districts are preparing for a potential surge in COVID-19. Columbia Borough Superintendent Tom Strickler says his district has not had any outbreaks yet, knock on wood.
I think what's working well is the fact that our staff, as well as our parents, are doing the pre-checks prior to coming to school.
Strickler says his district plans on keeping a hybrid model in place for students and will continue enforcing social distancing and mask wearing.
I don't think we change anything. I think there's going to be a spike in testing because many of the flu symptoms and cold symptoms are similar to COVID symptoms. So we're definitely expecting an increase in testing cases.
Now, if cases do spike and schools are forced to go all online, Ephrata Area Superintendent Dr. Brian Troop says his district will be ready.
Our teachers have already been teaching towards online learners and structuring their curriculum to be delivered online. So it would be a switch. Certainly it would be a different scenario than having two or three kids joining online to having your whole class online. But the core parts of that instructional piece are already in place.
In the northern tier, the Troy School District moved to all online learning today. That remote education model will remain in place at least through Friday, October 16th. The Steuben County, New York legislature is requesting that Governor Cuomo lift his state of emergency order for that county.
It's kind of been a hodgepodge, and he's the one that makes the call on everything.
Legislative Chairman Scott Van Etten says it's time to give power back to the county. He thinks they've accomplished the goals of the state of emergency, which were put in place back in March.
The original intent of the state of emergency was to flatten the curve and prevent overrunning the ICU units and hospitals, and they've done that.
Van Etten thinks Steuben County officials are more than capable of managing this health care crisis.
It's a principle called home rule. You like to have government ruling at the lowest level possible, closest to the people.
He adds communicating with the governor's office on reopening has been, in a word, frustrating. Pennsylvania Governor Tom Wolf wants to remove the stigma associated with opioid addiction.
Yeah, that's the aim of the Life Unites Us campaign that was unveiled yesterday in Pennsylvania.
The tragedy of any health crisis, any statistic, is actually a life.
Governor Tom Wolf says the stigma associated with opioid addiction is the main reason why folks don't get treatment.
Substance use disorder does not define a person. The campaign will share stories and information about substance use disorder to combat stigma in the Commonwealth and encourage all of those who are struggling with the disease to seek help.
Governor Wolf says 65% of all drug overdoses in Pennsylvania involve opioids. Bill Price, Family Life News.
Thank you, Bill. New York's ban on evicting tenants who are struggling to pay the rent, well, it's been extended until January 1st now. The governor signed that executive order yesterday. Joseph Hanna owns rental property throughout the Rochester region. He says this executive order is putting landlords between a rock and a hard place.
The non-payment of rent negatively impacts our income flow, and consequently, some of our group are having trouble paying some basic bills.
But others like Mohini Sharma with the group Metro Justice in Rochester says the pandemic has made it so thousands cannot pay the rent. She says the three-month extension on evictions does not go far enough.
Housing court is still open and people will still have to fight their cases in housing court in the middle of dealing with all the other hardships that are coming with the pandemic, like job loss, losing loved ones, losing their health care, having to, you know, decide between putting food on the table or paying other bills.
Metro Justice says if the moratorium is not extended past January, tenants could be in an even tighter spot.
All of those people, and it's upwards of a million people across the state right now, will owe months upon months of back rent, even though they've been unemployed for almost half a year. So what we'll be facing if this eviction moratorium isn't put into place for at least a year and during a recovery period is a massive debt and eviction crisis.
Joseph Hanna is calling for a more balanced approach from the state on those who are facing financial hardship.
It's incumbent upon the courts to separate those in need from those who are taking advantage of the system.
Hanna says he and other landlords in the Rochester region are working with their tenants to find easier ways for them to pay what they owe on their rent. The Buffalo Bills meeting today with Erie County Executive Mark Poloncarz. They're discussing ways to bring the fans back for home games starting next month. Poloncarz says fans would have to be spaced out in pods throughout the stadium.
We believe that at least 10% of the normal seating could be fit, which is a little over 70%.
7,000. I think the bills are looking for 9,000. It's really kind of in the state's hands right now.
Governor Cuomo still hesitant about bringing back the fans. Right now, there is a ban on public gatherings of more than 50 people in New York.
If the infection rate goes up, and then we're going to have to close businesses or tighten up gatherings, then you're going to make more people unhappy.
Lieutenant Governor and Western New York native Kathy Hochul says she understands people's frustration with the empty stands in Buffalo.
Hey, I get it. And there are countless times during yesterday's game, I was like, turn up the applause, fire them up, make it louder. Come on, I want to hear louder crowd noise. And, you know, it's frustrating, but we're still in a pandemic.
The Bills would like to have fans in the stands for that epic primetime battle with the Super Bowl champion Kansas City Chiefs on Thursday night, October 15th. We'll see if it happens. More sports next. It's the two-minute drill. Here's Sonny.
Yeah, let's start with Monday Night Football. Patrick Mahomes outplayed Lamar Jackson, a matchup of the last two NFL MVPs, as the Chiefs beat the Ravens 34-20. Mahomes, the 2018 MVP and last year's Super Bowl MVP, threw for four touchdowns and ran for one, impressing head coach Andy Reid.
Gotta give credit to Pat for leading the charge. I mean, he stepped up big and wanted the responsibility to lead the charge, and did a great job.
The defending Super Bowl champion Chiefs joined the Bills, Steelers, and Titans as AFC teams to go 3-0. But speaking of the Titans, they have closed their facility until Saturday after three players and five non-players tested positive for COVID-19. The Minnesota Vikings, who played the Titans Sunday, did the same today. No decision yet has been made about Sunday's game against the Steelers. To the ice, they are the champions.
Was Goodrow. The Tampa Bay Lightning have won the Stanley Cup!
The Tampa Bay Lightning knocked off the Dallas Stars 2-0 to win the Stanley Cup. Lightning defenseman Victor Hedman awarded the Conn Smythe Trophy after finishing the playoffs with 22 points.
We're going to be champions forever. You know, we're going to be in that cup, you know, forever. And obviously this is the biggest thing that's happened to us in our hockey career.
Major League Baseball playoffs underway. The Yankees and Indians play game one of their best of three American League wildcard series tonight in Cleveland. New York's Gerrit Cole opposing Cleveland's Shane Bieber. Yankee manager Aaron Boone on facing this year's likely American League Cy Young Award winner.
As a group, the goal is just, you know, you're not just going to probably pound away on them, but hopefully we can make it challenging enough for them to, you know, make him work hard, and then when he does make a mistake, hopefully we can take advantage.
In St. Pete, the American League East champion Tampa Bay Rays will battle the Toronto Blue Jays. Matt Shoemaker on the mound for Toronto, and in Minneapolis, the American League Central champion Twins and defending American League champion Astros square off in their best-of-three series. NBA news, the Clippers and coach Doc Rivers have parted after a seven-year run. For Family Life, I'm Sonny Dolphia.
All right, Sonny, thank you very much. Still to come on the Noon Report, Trump versus Biden tonight in Cleveland. Back to school in the Big Apple and how to save a life in Rushford, New York.
When slopes are slippery, especially in the area of human sexuality, humans tend to slide all the way to the bottom. For the Colson Center, I'm John Stone Street. This is Breakpoint. Each and every chapter of the sexual revolution has featured an updated version of the same old myth. Hey, don't worry, the kids will be fine. Sex with anyone anywhere? The kids will be fine. Separating marriage from procreation? The kids will be fine. No-fault divorce? The kids will be fine. Same-sex marriages? Eliminating either a mom or a dad from the picture? The kids will be fine. Well, they weren't. They never have been. Growing up in families without married parents, their well-being sacrificed for the sake of adult happiness, these kids have been the primary victim of our sexual experimentations. To cover our tracks now, we've resorted to indoctrination. We attempt to convince them of other myths, such as the idea that biological sex and their physical bodies are just fully malleable things. Well, the kids aren't fine. They've never been fine, not throughout the entire history of sexual redefinition. And I think, actually, I'm afraid that the next chapter of this has just begun. Even before Netflix released Cuties, that French movie about an 11-year-old girl who joins a twerking dance group to escape her conservative Muslim family, it received widespread backlash. Many critics, including all of us here at the Colson Center, were horrified to think that a movie that featured pornographic footage of very young actresses would even be permitted to air. But it was. And even worse, once the director wrote an op-ed in the Washington Post attempting to explain her intentions, she and her film have been defended in mainstream media outlets. She was warning us about the sexualization of children through online technology. We were scolded, even if in the process, she sexualized actual children. The lead character, the one sexualized throughout the entire film, is played by an actual 11-year-old girl. at the risk of sounding like the old man who just yells, "Get off my lawn," no 11-year-old girl should ever be sexualized for any reason. The defense of this film makes me think that perhaps we've entered some new territory. You see, each and every stage of the sexual revolution has progressed the same way. A morally questionable activity enters into our culture, not through any moral arguments, but through the imagination, typically entertainment or some form of artistic expression. I'm old enough to remember how controversial Beverly Hills 90210 was, as it skirted the edge of our cultural moral boundaries, depicting teenagers that were talking about sex, but never actually having it. In the end, the characters mostly came down on the right side of the moral question, but not because of any appeal to a stable moral framework. No, the teens just, quote, weren't ready to take that step yet. Just a few years later, say on an episode of Friends, the teenager is having sex, this time with his teacher, and this time, it's funny. At the end of Cuties, I'm told, the lead character leaves behind her twerking dance crew and returns to her conservative family. The crisis is resolved through some weak notion of self-discovery, being true to yourself. This means that in the next Cuties, and there will be a next one, the ending will be different. Maybe her fundamentalist parents will learn to flex a little bit this time. Maybe in the one after that, she just doesn't go home at all. You see, what happened with sexual promiscuity, adultery, homosexuality, and currently with transgenderism is happening with kids. We've already told them that they can determine their own sexual identities. At the same time, the only ground left for sexual morality in our culture is this very flimsy notion of consent. So is it really that much of a leap, really, from here to kids self-determining their sexual behavior? Just 2 weeks ago, California's governor signed a bill decriminalizing homosexual activity between adults and minors that are 14 and over, as long as there's less than a 10-year age gap between the two and consent was given. Look, I hate to say it. The train of pedophilia has left the station. The kids will not be fine. For Breakpoint, I'm John Stone Street.
20 past the hour, Kevin Williams weather next.
Here is your family life weather forecast. The call for this afternoon, cloudy skies, showers, particularly central New York and central and eastern Pennsylvania. High temperatures mostly in the 60s. Tonight, a soaking rain for much of the area, with the exception far western New York and northwest Pennsylvania. Just a shower or two there. Low temperatures, upper 40s to the mid-50s. Tomorrow on Thursday, it will be blustery and chilly off Lake Erie in western New York and northwest Pennsylvania, with lake effect rain showers, thunder, and water spouts. But elsewhere across the region during those 2 days, it's a mix of clouds, sun, couple of scattered showers, highs in the upper 50s to the upper 60s.
All right, Kevin, that rain putting a little dent on the drought today. Like to see that. This is the Noon Report. I'm your host, Bob Price. Thanks for joining us. Lots going on this Tuesday afternoon, the 29th of September. Let's jump right in. Cleveland, Ohio, the epicenter of the political universe tonight, as President Trump and White House hopeful Joe Biden square off for the first of three presidential debates. Rich Lowry writes for the National Review.
Whoever's the dominant figure who really wins these debates. So the president will come out, obviously, and try to steamroll Joe Biden. And with Biden, there's been, you know, some doubts about his performance. So if he can stand up to that, not have any big debacles, not look weak, he's a step closer to the presidency.
Correspondent Ed O'Keefe says that this debate comes 5 weeks before Election Day, and the stakes could not be higher for the president, who is trailing in most of the polls.
The president, who's been campaigning nationwide in recent days, insists he needs no preparation.
He prepares for debates every single day, just by being president of the United States and addressing the concerns of the American people.
Trump campaign spokesman Tim Murtaugh says they're taking Biden's debate skills seriously.
In the Democrat primaries, he just came through 11 debates and managed to beat 24 opponents. Joe Biden is a guy who knows his way around the debate stage.
Biden is a longtime debate veteran, and he's been preparing from his Delaware home. His team is anticipating tough attacks from the president, potentially about Biden's son, Hunter, and his past work in China and Ukraine.
Dr. Kevin Hardwick at Canisius College in Buffalo doubts this debate will move the needle of public opinion that much.
What it may do is it may excite the base of one party or another. But I think in terms of changing minds, no, I think people know who Donald Trump is. They know who Joe Biden is, and they've pretty much made up their mind.
Chris Wallace of Fox News will moderate the 90-minute debate, which will include six topics of discussion. They are the coronavirus pandemic, the economy, race and violence, the Biden and Trump records, the integrity of the election, and the U.S. Supreme Court vacancy. The Wine Country wildfires in Northern California have now claimed three lives and destroyed 40,000 acres. Three blazes merged into one yesterday, and the flames are 0% contained. Correspondent Jonathan Vigliotti has more from Napa Valley.
The glass incident fire tore through Napa and Sonoma counties while leaving entire neighborhoods in ruins. Evacuees say they had little time to outrun the flames as it grew to tens of thousands of acres.
A lot of explosions, flames everywhere.
As you were escaping?
Yes.
It covered cars with ash and turned the skies above Sonoma County red as the smoke blocked the sun.
Another beautiful day in the Napa Valley. Unbelievable.
The Zog fire, some 300 miles to the north, grew to 15,000.
The nation's largest school district, New York City, welcoming back students today for the first time since mid-March.
Around 90,000 elementary school students taking the risk to go back for in-person classes. Many of them very excited to see teachers and friends again.
I'm pretty excited because I haven't been in actual school in like 7 months.
Some schools will hold outdoor classes inside. Everyone will be socially distanced. Still, about half of public school parents have opted to keep their kids home. No one laden New York.
And less is more when it comes to your Turkey Day plans. The Centers for Disease Control issuing a Thanksgiving activity guideline in the age of coronavirus.
While people continue to navigate the safest way to celebrate Thanksgiving amid the pandemic, the CDC recommends people keep gathering small, forego travel if possible, and conduct Black Friday shopping online. The CDC also ranking holiday activities with risk levels from low-risk ventures like limited the Turkey Day meal to just household members. High-risk endeavors include attending parades and visiting a crowded mall. Liz Warner, New York.
25 past the hour. This is the Noon Report. Welcome to another edition of Hometown Heroes on Family Life. I'm your host, Bill Price. Our guests this week, Laura and Walter Hopkins from Rushford, New York. They helped save the life of a little girl by donating a liver. What a neat story, especially during these tough times for a lot of families. We need some hope, and you guys are living proof of that. We'll start with you, Walter. How did you guys hear about the Beck family and their need?
Well, it was actually, we have a mutual friend with the Becks. Laura used to teach in the Cuba Rushford School District, and one of her colleagues there, Shannon Albert, she was sharing the page that was Baby Aylin Needs a Liver. And so she shared that with us, and we saw it on Facebook. So we both happened to see it separately, and we both felt a tug on our hearts to say, well, maybe we ought to see what we can do to help this family. We didn't know them.
And this is not like donating some money or something like that. I mean, you're donating your liver here, Laura. Those aren't familiar with the story, this little girl, Aylin Beck, was in desperate need of a liver. You stepped in, donated yours. What was the deciding factor for you?
Oh, there were so many things, honestly. But from the very beginning, as Walter shared, we had kind of just a burden on our hearts for her and for her family. And as Walter shared, both of the Becks, Aylin's parents, are public school teachers. We were both public school teachers when our two kids were born, and we were blessed that they were born very healthy and have not had any health complications. But when I read their story, in my mind, I could sort of put myself in their shoes and really just had a lot of empathy for them. And I would say, like, that burden that we had on our hearts that we both felt at the same time without having talked to each other was God's calling and God's leading.
So, Laura, you are among the 5% of living donors in the U.S. Mm-hmm. Most people who are alive don't do this. You have. How does that make you feel?
I don't know, I guess. It's pretty amazing to think about, and almost reflecting back on it now that we're back into our fall semester at Houghton, and in spite of the pandemic, things feel a little more normal than they did this summer. It almost in some ways seems like it didn't even really happen, you know. I feel really strong and healthy 13, 14 weeks out from surgery.
Yeah.
And, except when I look at the scar, in my daily life, I'm not thinking about the fact that this was part of my life this summer.
Sure.
And so it's pretty surreal, but it's been an amazing experience in so many ways.
So it really hasn't changed how you live to be down a liver?
Actually, no. That's one of the amazing things. We've learned so much through this process about the liver and how God designed it to function and so many things that it helps to regulate in our bodies when it's working well. But also, one of the really amazing things about it is that the liver is one of the few organs that can regenerate. Yeah. So my liver has basically fully regenerated at this point.
You're listening to Hometown Heroes on Family Life. Our guests this week, Laura and Walter Hopkins from Rushford, New York. And have you talked to the Beck family recently? How is little Aylin doing?
Yeah, we've actually gotten to know them a little bit, and that's been really one of the amazing blessings that's come out of this. Honestly, we thought we were going on this adventure to be servants and to serve in a way that we felt called to do. But it's really been an amazing blessing, and one of the things has been getting to know the Beck family. And they're doing quite well. Aylin is making really good progress, although she definitely still has a long journey ahead. And
share with our listeners, Laura, what it just feels like to look into little Aylin's eyes and to know that literally part of you is inside of her. How does that make you feel?
Oh, overwhelmed, honestly, with emotion. And just to have had the opportunity to do this is pretty amazing. I would never have imagined that God would choose to call and use me in this kind of a way. And she's beautiful, and she's so cheerful and doing so well. And every time we get a picture update from the Beck family, it just fills our whole house with joy, honestly.
We weren't able to hold baby Aylin, but it was pretty incredible to actually be able to see her in person, to meet her parents in person, and to just enjoy a meal together and to talk about this experience, this journey that we've all been on together.
That's Laura and Walter Hopkins from Rushford, New York, this week's Hometown Heroes. Join us next week as we search for your home, your town, your hero. It's Hometown Heroes on Family Life.
All right, love that feature. Thank you very much, Bill. Hometown Heroes comes your way every Tuesday during the Noon Report, or you can catch it online anytime. Go to fln.org/podcast. Click on the news icon.
Good afternoon. Here is your Family Life regional weather forecast. After a spell of warmth and sunshine, I've changed last night and today with a shift in the jet stream pattern, and more rain is on the way. And for dry areas, drought-stricken areas, it's a very good thing. The call for this afternoon, cloudy skies, showers, particularly central New York and central and eastern Pennsylvania, high temperatures mostly in the 60s. Tonight, a soaking rain for much of the area, with the exception of far western New York and northwest Pennsylvania, just a shower or two there. Low temperatures, upper 40s to the mid-50s. Tomorrow on Thursday, it will be blustery and chilly off Lake Erie in western New York and northwest Pennsylvania, with lake effect rain showers, thunder, and water spouts. But elsewhere across the region during those 2 days, it's a mix of clouds, sun, couple of scattered showers, highs in the upper 50s to the upper 60s.
All right, great job at the Weather Center. Thank you, Kevin. Finally at noon, Java lovers rejoice. Today is your day. It is, after all, National Coffee Day. I think that's the sound of brewing coffee. Anyway, Starbucks, Dunkin' Donuts, and Krispy Kreme all marking the occasion with special deals on all kinds of caffeinated beverages. Did you know no country in the world produces more coffee than Brazil, and no country in the world consumes more coffee than Finland? Of all countries, the drink dates back to the year 800 AD in the African country of Ethiopia. Legend has it a 9th century goat herder noticed the effect that caffeine had on his goats, who appeared to dance after eating the fruit of the coffee plant. Coffee beans start as berries before they ripen. They're used to make the second most popular beverage in the world next to tea. So next time you brew that perfect cup of Joe, just think you can thank a ninth century Ethiopian goat for providing the inspiration that led to this wonderful invention we call today coffee. And that's our world for Tuesday, September 29th. I'm Bob Price. Family Life News.
You've been listening to the Noon Report, heard weekdays on Family Life. Thank you for listening.